God met me in the darkest time of my life while I was on house arrest. And they say, yo, well, you know, prisoners meet Jesus and stuff. Well, you dang right they do. Because sometimes you got to be at the bottom of the bottom of the barrel and be wrangled in by the law to realize that you need help. And you're not as crazy as you think. You're not as wild man and lone wolf and all this garbage. We need brothers. We need each other. Iron sharpens iron, only at the right angle.
My name is Johnny L. Sasser, and I'm a former Special Operations U.S. Army Ranger and Tactical Commander to the U.S. Ambassador's Protective Detail. I have seen the struggle even the most hardened men have faced when they combat their inner demons, and I am here to shine a light on those struggles to show that no man is exempt from adversity and internal pain. Men from all walks of life share their stories of hardship, darkness, and perseverance so that every man knows that whatever he is going through, he is not alone. Evolution for Men begins now. Hey everyone, today's episode we are featuring Jimmy Watson, former Navy SEAL, former Blackwater Protective Specialist, and also former Marine. He is an amazing human. We get into a deep, deep conversation around some of the things that are actually going on in today's society. One, namely Sean Strickland's bashing of Navy SEALs, and number two, some things that have gone on in Jimmy's life where he's been targeted by the federal government for certain things that have gone on. And I know some inside stories behind a lot of this just due to the fact that Jimmy and I have lived similar lives, parallel lives, in as far as the protective industry and also in special operations. And so I have some insight to this that I lend some credibility to in the sense of defending Jimmy's position and what has gone on with him. So it's a very insightful conversation, but also you get to hear about how a man of integrity has lived his life through the struggles, through the ups and downs, what that has been stacked against him, what he's had to defend himself against, and still has persevered into a good-hearted, God-loving man who is looking to help men get better, to help men to find that strength within and be that solid, positive man who also has integrity and grit. So this is a fun, fun episode. It is the tip of the iceberg with Jimmy, and I know we're going to have him back on the show. So have a great time listening to it, and remember, I'll see y'all around the corner. All right, everyone. Welcome back to The Art of Masculinity. We got my boy, Jimmy Watson, on today. Gonna have a great conversation. Brother, how you been?
Man, I'm doing great, brother. It's great to see your face, man. Great to be on your show. Thanks, bro.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. I'm so excited to dive in today. You and I have a lot of similarities in our backgrounds, a lot of weird shit going on today that just kind of, I think men just kind of need to hear from men like us, but also see examples of kind of some of the ways that we live our lives, holding truth, holding integrity with the values that were instilled in us from the fabric of special operations. I think there's a lot of that wavering in today's society, man. So I'm really humbled and proud to have you on the show, former Navy SEAL, former Blackwater Protective Specialist, and you were in the freaking... Bro, you were in the Wild West days, man. I got a lot of boys that were shooting around with you in those days. And it was wild. It was wild out there.
Brother, I saw more action in Blackwater than I ever did in the Marine Corps or SEALs.
Yeah.
You know, you were in Triple Canopy. It was the Wild, Wild West, you know? It's like we were writing down our incident reports on back of MRE cards and turning them into the Department of State. Like there was no typing out a report, like a police report. It was like two military aged men, you know, I felt threatened for my life and that's it, with a crayon, turn it in, attaboy, go back out. Right.
Yeah.
So it's pretty crazy.
Dude, bro, I'm going to take everybody back a second because I want to hear you talk about this. Your story's pretty actually crazy when you think about your trajectory. So most of us went to the military and then went to the protective side of the house, right? You went like military, protection, military. Like talk a little bit about your transition from like how that process went for you. Cause bro, you got back into the military after you were getting the money from the Blackwater days.
Yeah. You know, it's a decisive moment in a young man's life when he decides to go into the military, like I did with the Marines. When you have to go back, when you feel like your destiny, your purpose is in the SEALs, and that's what you've been wanting to do after you've done the military already, the Marines, after you've made a ton of money with Blackwater, after you've seen a ton of combat, it was extraordinarily humbling to have to go through MEPS again. I mean, I went through MEPS, bro. I was still wearing whitey tighties. I didn't get the memo that you're not supposed to wear whitey tighties anymore. I was older, dude. And so, in fact, a lot of the Bud's instructors knew me from Blackwater. You know, Chet Dan, Cheswick, Danny Carroll, and all these guys. And these guys were like, Jimmy, what are you doing here, bro? Like, why would you want to put yourself through this, man? Something I always wanted to do. Would love to get into my decision making at the time to actually do that.
Yeah. I want to dive into that too. But first, I gotta let everybody know, when your boys or people who know you are the instructors, it's not going to be easier. It ain't going to be easier, bro. And in fact, a lot of times it's going to be harder, right? When they realize that, they're like, oh, we know this, bro. Like, how'd that go for you?
It was terrible. Well, first of all, I have United States Marine Corps. That's 40 letters across my back, right?
Oh, and, well done.
Yeah, very well done. And so when you're standing at the pool at Bud's, you know, they have a day right when you get there where they walk around, bro, and they look at everybody's tattoos and make fun of you, right? Yeah. And of course, I wasn't covered up like this at the time, but I had this big United States Marine Corps tattoo. The instructor was walking up and down, like making fun of guys' tattoos, like, you better not ever say, God will only judge you. I'm going to judge you, bro. You know, like that kind of stuff. And then he gets to me and he just goes, holy shit, bro. And he just walks away. Like in dead silence, and we're all sitting there. I'm shaking, you know, in my little UDTs. And he goes and gets a bunch of other instructors. And
oh, that's the worst. Come here.
You gotta see this guy. Like,
yep.
You got to see this. And I'm just like, I am so stupid. Like, why would I do that? Right. And the guys and the instructor came over. They all came over there. And they said, Watson, stand, come here. And I went over there. And I'll never forget it. I thought that I was going to just get hammered. Like, because everybody was like, bro, don't go in the SEALs. You got that United States Marine Corps thing. They hate Marines. They're going to just destroy you. And I'm thinking all these crazy thoughts psychologically. They tell me to come over there. And the guy's name was Vargas. He's like, and he was a prime Marine. And I was like, this is terrible. You know, because he made it through, right? And he was like, he looked pretty mean, dude. And he was like, where were you, brother? And that's all he said. And it kind of shocked me what he said. So I told him where I was, where I went, where I deployed to the Marines, and then my time in Blackwater. I'll never forget. He said, well, don't step on my dick, and I'm not going to step on your dick. And I'm like, well, you're not going to have a trouble stepping on my dick because it's, you know, anyways, you know, after that, bro, there was this mutual respect, but it was kind of the opposite. It was like they expected more out of me.
Yep.
It beat me pretty bad. But
yeah.
There was a level of wanting you to make it, I would say.
Well, you had earned respect with them. You'd been to combat.
Well, you think about it, man. You're right. You think about it in the SEALs, it's kind of different than other services. You know, in the teams, like you go through the training and then your instructor and you can be on a platoon in 1 year from then, 2 years from then. And so they know, like, They're looking for good guys. They want guys with experience. They want mature guys. And so they look at a Marine, a prior Marine, or an SF guy, or a Ranger, and they think, dude, I want this guy on my team because he's not going to get me killed in a year from now. And lo and behold, you always see these instructors in your team. It's really weird dynamic.
Yeah. Yeah, we would get similar stuff. So our instructors from RIP, when I was doing Ranger Indoctrination Program, they would show up in your battalion as like an E7 down the road. And then all of a sudden, they're a platoon sergeant for you. And they're like, bro, yeah, I whooped your ass in training. And you're like, yes, you did. And now you're my platoon sergeant and we're watching your back too. So, and I get that, man. We had that same kind of camaraderie where it's like, when you see good dudes, you're like, that's a guy I want to be working with down the road. Because eventually, if he makes it through this, he could be in a unit that I'm with.
You know, brother Johnny, I got all the respect in the world for Rangers. I worked with second bat guys in Blackwater, and that was really my first time to work with Rangers. You know, we don't really work with them much in the teams. And there's a lot about team guys. There's a lot of rifts and weird stuff. You got me and Andy Stump over here. You got Gallagher. You got this guy, you know. But, you know, the Rangers are tight.
Yeah.
And the guys that I worked with, man, were just absolutely – you guys don't get enough credit. We're hard as nails. We're top of the chain for me, man, working with you guys in Blackwater. And I always had incredible respect for the Rangers, from the group guys, the SF guys, and all of you, man. Seriously.
Yeah, appreciate that, bro. Appreciate that. And likewise, man, we were talking about this yesterday, man. It's one of those things like, you know, spec ops guys, we'll all bust each other's balls. But at the end of the day, we go work together and we fucking crush it. Like nobody, and no one can stand against our special operations community, in my opinion, in the world.
No. Yeah. One team, one fight, one cause, brother.
Yeah, man. It's a freaking awesome thing. But I got to work with some of your boys too in different locations around the world, man. And we always had joint missions with some SF dudes and stuff like that. It's always fun, man. It's a fun time to get to intermingle some of these communities and start to really see how elite the US truly is when you combine those powers. But I want to take us back a second. So talk about SEALs real quick, because like a lot of people don't know that pipeline. Like they hear of Hell Week, but they don't know the intensity you guys are put through for the longevity, right? And so talk a little bit about that, because this is also going to lead us into a little bit of a conversation we'll have later. But talk about that shit, man, because it ain't no joke, bro.
Well, you know, recently Andy Stump, another SEAL, kind of said that some of this stuff wasn't true that I had said, right? Well, here's the deal. This is not a measuring contest. These are just the absolute facts, okay? Now, some of my numbers could be a little off, but you get the point here. You're recruited out of thousands. You go to Great Lakes in Chicago to pre-buds now. You go there with 500 guys. Out of the 500 guys, you're all competing for a slot to go to buds in Coronado. Out of that 500, 250 guys will class up out of the 500, okay? And so you're always going balls out. And so you get to buds with 200 guys or 250 guys, and you look at the class that's only maybe 3 or 4 weeks ahead of you. And there's like 10 guys in that class, maybe 4 weeks ahead of you. And you got 250 guys that just started, and all of you are rock solid dudes. And you're just going, bro, what happened to this freaking army here, this small little unit, to be whittled down to 7 to 10 guys. Like there was literally just 10 guys, I think, in the class ahead of
me. Damn.
Okay, I think it was 281. And they showed up with 250 guys just a few weeks ago. And so it's kind of ineffable, brother. It's kind of hard to explain how difficult it is. Any one of those guys, any one of us can survive several days at Bud's. It's not about surviving it. That's what people don't understand. They say, well, you just don't quit. That's just simply not true. You're running with a freaking boat on your head. You know, it's slapping you, and a boat is very, very heavy. It's slapping you against the head. You look like Bozo the Clown. It's scalping you, basically. There are skin grafts that happen there. You know, I literally called my buddy the other day, and he said that there were 7 guys that had skin grafts total that he knew of while he was an instructor there. Another buddy of mine, and this is extremely hard to believe, but he called me one day as a first base buds instructor, and he said, dude, you'll never believe it. One of the guys, his chafing is so bad, his left testicle is protruding out. Like his left testicle is protruding out. And how they know that is he was holding it like this in Hell Week, shaking, and the instructor walked by him and said, hey, stop holding your pee pee, man. Like, what are you doing? And the guy was like, no. He was like, no. And he goes, hey, man, I just said stop grabbing your pee pee like that, you know, like something like that. And finally, the guy let it go, and the doctors looked at him, and that's a true story. Now, I didn't believe that, and maybe some of the viewers may not believe that, but I called a couple of my buddies, and they verified that story. The point is the chafing can be atrocious. And I just ended up putting a bunch of petroleum jelly on me and stuff the whole time. And it was bad, but not that bad. It's just bad, man. You've got hundreds of miles you're running, and it's endless. And one of the reasons why Buds is so difficult is because it's not just one evolution that's bad. You know, you'll be doing log PT for 3 freaking hours straight one day. You do a 2-mile time swim, and you have to make these times. You can't just slack off. You know, I noticed one time I slacked off and I failed the run. And I was like, oh my God, I have to pick up the pace. And so, you know, you can have one SEAL, one candidate that does extremely well and aces the run on one day. Okay. And you can be a slow guy like I was at 220 pounds and get gooned all the time. But if I improve my score the next week, then I get to stay in the class. It's not just about survival. But if that super fast guy, you know, if that super fast guy isn't beating his last time that was better than mine, but if he's not improving, they look at that as the gray man. They look at that as the guy that's not putting out, and they can cut you for that. And so that happens a lot. And so you end up 3 weeks later having maybe 20 guys in your class after Hell Week, maybe 10 to 20 guys. And then out of your original class that you go through with, you'll graduate 7 guys out of that 500 that started at pre-buzz, technically, or maybe 250, I should say. And so I didn't graduate with my first class. I got rolled for a broken ankle and then graduated with my second class. And out of that second class, about 25 guys will make it. So it's freaking hard. And the reason why it's so hard is obviously, as you know this, Johnny, it's simulating war.
Yeah, yeah. They need you to be freaking mentally tough, bro, and physically tough. They need you to be handle whatever comes at you out there. I mean, we did, and I believe you did this as well, but we did countless missions in the mountains of Afghanistan. Try thinking about rucking out freaking over 100 pounds of gear on your body and having to go then hit an objective with terrorists on it, hit an objective, and then get out of there and then do follow-on missions afterwards. I mean, it all simulates what we experience overseas time and time again.
Exactly. You know, and buds can't even really simulate war. You can't possibly mimic war, the war conditions.
Correct.
And so they like you said, so they try to do their very best at pounding the living daylights out of you to simulate war conditions.
Yep.
And I would say that it does a really good job at it, because in war, you're exasperated. You're absolutely exhausted all the time. And you sleep like a little dog, you know, that takes naps and stuff. And on deployment, as you know, and a lot of guys end up failing out or quitting that could have made it. But they realize a couple weeks into it, man, they realize a couple weeks, 3-4 weeks into this brutal training, that it's endless. It's going to be their entire SEAL career. You know, their freaking toenails are going to fall out and stuff because their feet are so wet all the time, you know. And so they get defeated in their mind. A lot of them say, I know I can make it, but I'm just quitting because I don't want to do this anymore. I didn't realize that the reason why they're freaking beating me so bad is because this is how it's going to be in the teams. And then I have to go do my job, which is war.
Yep. It's a lifestyle, bro. And I think that's like part of the thing people don't realize about Spec Ops. And first thing is too, I haven't talked about it much on the show, but Special Operations community, the community of us, which is different, you know, branch of the military, different units, is the top 1% of the entire United States military. It's only 1% of it, but it is the best 1% we have to offer. All of the community goes through their own forms of these rites of passages, but it becomes a lifestyle because it never gets easier. Like it doesn't get easier when you get to teams. It doesn't get easier when you get to Ranger Battalion. It doesn't get easier anywhere you go. And it's that way by design, because they're just hard motherfuckers that have to do the most dirtiest, darkest shit for this country so that people like Sean Strickland can spout their stupid fucking mouth off, you know? And that to me is the epitome of a selfless elite warrior, is that community. Are the SEALs, are the Rangers, are the Pararescue, are the Delta, are the Special Force. Like, that is a community of brothers that fucking keep this flag meaning what it fucking means. And I was thinking about it after you and I had that conversation. And I'm like, this is a group of men who chose to get the shit kicked out of them to train to the most elite standard, all for the right to get killed. That's what it was. Because that was the only thing. That was the only other possibility. It wasn't for money. I didn't make a lot of money. Did you make a lot of
money? No. And what happens when we're done? You know, there's no mommy and daddy clapping their hands or accolades. Who cares about awards or any of that crap? You know, right. You come home to people who some respected. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of true, real patriots out there in Americans. And then you have guys like Sean Strickland or guys like Sean Strickland that totally disrespect everything the SEALs stand for. But more importantly, they disrespect what the warfighter stands for, what the sacrifices that he had to make.
Yeah.
You know, and whether or not people think it's for their freedom or not, that's not the point. It's about respecting a man, a real man that's willing to stand up and go fight it out. It doesn't matter right or wrong. I know there was nuclear weapons in Iraq. If anybody knows, it's me and you. If anyone knows, it's somebody who stepped in the ground in Iraq and realized we weren't there for nothing, but we went. And when people say, well, you were just a contractor. Well, we did our time and served our sentences. And then we came to Iraq and died.
Yep.
So I have a big problem with anyone who disrespects our flag, our country, the sacrifice that our men and women make out there.
And that's the thing for me is that, you know, there's a different level of man it takes to first off to even say, hey, I'm going to go, you know, be part of a military unit. And then there's a second kind of man that says, I'm going to go be part of the most elite, you know, version of that military. And that man, both those men deserve a ton of respect, but there's no downplaying. Like, and we'll talk about this in a second, but when what Sean Strickland said, if he was willing to basically act as though SEALs were soft and their training was soft, what else does he think about the rest of the military then, right? And then this motherfucker wants to say that he's like, oh, no disrespect to the military people. Well, if you think SEALs, who have one of the hardest pipelines on the planet, are soft, what do you think of the rest of the fucking people that are, that aren't doing that, right? It's just like you said, disrespecting men that put that uniform on, but the mindset it takes to be at that level, the eliteness that it takes to be at that level, the earned respect of somebody willing to put themselves in a job that their ultimate payout is surviving war. That's the ultimate payout. And then the worst payout is they don't make it, right? They get killed in war. Like, to disrespect a man that puts himself through that pipeline is something else. And I'll say one more thing with that motherfucker. It's like, hey man, you're not a Navy SEAL for a reason. Like, you weren't in special operations for a reason, obviously. So you can say all you want about your fucking training, but you didn't do any of that stuff because you can't do it. Either you can't do it or you were too scared to do it. But don't tell me you could do it because you've never been through it.
Well, you know, the SEALs are all about show me the action, brother. Show me the action. Because, you know, in the SEAL teams, it's not like we don't talk trash to each other. You know, we like to joke around, but you don't see guys running their mouth like Sean Strickland. You would just get checked. I mean, hard. Because we've all been through such a terrible system. And the word is ineffable. You can't describe the training that we go through, the hardship. Well, we've all been through this really difficult training. And so once you go through that and you see the guy next to you, all of his vulnerabilities and his weaknesses, and he sees yours, and then you realize that it takes a team in this fight, then all the bravado is, all the bravados go away. All that macho talk goes away. And that was the point of me calling out Sean Strickland. That was the point of me saying, hey, shut your mouth, bro, because you have no idea of the sacrifice that it takes for a service member to go through what they go through, all right? There's no cameras around. There's no air-conditioned building to train in, you know? There's the sea, air, and land, and you die in all three of those every single year. And so it was shocking to see Sean Strickland say what he did. And it was quite offensive. And I like to be funny. I like to keep it hilarious. A lot of my videos are more funny, lighthearted stuff. But that had to be said about Sean Strickland, because you can't just run your mouth like that. I see a very insecure little boy with Sean. Now, sure, he can throw that leather, man. And that's great. But once again, you're in a controlled environment where a referee can come in and break you up at any time. That's the main reason why guys fell in BUDS. We have a saying in BUDS, it's like, the guy that you know for sure is going to make it always fails. And I've heard some people on YouTube say, you know, oh, Sean Strickland would make it through Buzz. I highly doubt it because it's not about athleticism. It's not about being able to take a punch or delivering one. There is no winning. And when you take winning, when you take all winning and all accolades and kudos and the prize fighting away, the money away, and there's only grit, determination, and failure.
Yep.
Those three things, grit, determination, and failure is the only rewards that you get in the SEALs. That's it. There's no tap. There's no even patting you on the back, you know? And so when you realize that, that's why the top 10, that's why Olympians quit in Buds, because there's no one clapping for them anymore. There's no reward. There is zero reward in Buds or SEAL training or in the SEALs.
Yeah, we had a saying in Ranger Battalion. It was the quiet professional. No one talked about what we did. No one knew it. We all knew what we did, but no one talked about it. And we didn't talk about it going out. And if someone asked us what we did, we were like, oh, you know, we're gym support. Like, we just clean gyms. We're janitors. Like, we just all we talk about. Because we don't, there's that unknown essence is what, when you know what you're capable of, you don't need to talk about it. You don't need to brag about it. And that was, for me, a big humbling lesson in the sense of that's how you live your life when you're in those units. And yeah, I agree. Like, somebody like him is really wounded. I know that. I've listened to some of his stuff about what's happened in his past. He's got a lot of trauma he hasn't dealt with. And then there's also a lot of things for him where he's, you know, I think he feels insecure around people who are elite. And I think that's why he acted out personally. But he did it in to a very wrong community, and he did it the wrong way. And for people that don't know, what we're referring to is Sean Strickland came out and basically said that he would break off any Navy SEAL in his training, and that his training's harder than Navy SEALs, and he's tired of hearing about Navy SEALs and all this shit. And to me, it set me off because, again, like, those are my brothers from the Spec Ops community. And when you shit on them, like I said, it's one thing for us to bust each other's balls, and someone that's from outside of our community is to talk some shit on somebody. And that's when all Spec Ops community should be unified and be like, whoa, 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 bro. No, no, that's our bros. Like, you shouldn't even be saying that shit, because number one, you couldn't make it probably through any of our training, let alone fucking SEALs. And number two, you're talking about something you have no clue about. So that's kind of what we're referring to for everybody listening. And my boy Jimmy over here came out, was the first person to kind of defend the SEALs and the special operations community against that kind of bullshit. And I thought you were really respectful with it, to be honest. You called him out, and I would have done the same, presented it the same way. And you did it, and you gave him respect for his craft, right? And that's what I appreciate about you. You didn't just come guns blazing like he's a little bitch. You're like, no, I'll give you credit, bro. You ain't a little bitch, but you ain't no Navy SEAL, man. And there's a reason why you aren't.
Yeah, I said, Sean, you know, I know you're, we know you're a badass. You don't have to tell us that, you know? But, you know, we're losing men in our training. We have guys die every year. In the walls of a bar like Danny's in Coronado are lined with our dudes. And I would like to ask Sean, has he ever gone in a bar and with his best friends, right? And had a great time. And then the next year he goes in the same bar and his friends are there with him, but they're hanging on the wall, man. They're not with him anymore.
Yeah.
Is that dramatic? No, it's not even close to being dramatic, because it's reality. And this stuff has to be said. And I've received the massive support behind this speaks for itself from the Rangers, because y'all always lead the way. The Marines, Semper Fi, to you hard dudes out there, to even the pro MMA fighting community has backed this, you know?
Yeah.
Why one SEAL would stand up against this and kind of go against this, you know, like I'm sure we'll get into. I'm not so sure. I don't know. But for the most part, here's the point. If you're against one of your brothers like me standing up for you,
for your training,
for what you did, your sacrifice, then I'm sorry, man, we ain't brothers, brother. You know what I mean? Because it's like if we were in a firefight together and then I just stopped shooting and I ran away.
Yeah.
You'd want to beat my ass when we got back, and I would be kicked off the team. It's time to back each other up. Rangers, Marines, Rangers, SEALs, Delta, CAG, whatever, SF, everybody to back each other up. And when some when some guy like Sean Strickland, okay, I'm not going to call him a clown, okay, but when a guy like Sean Strickland, okay, because I have no hate for Sean, but when a guy like him runs his mouth like that and no one stands up against it, something's wrong, brother. Yeah. Something's seriously wrong with that.
Well, and you know, obviously my show being The Art of Masculinity about, you know, building healthy men, strong, determined, healthy men, right? What do you see when someone like Sean comes out, right? Obviously he's got a platform. A lot of people know who he is. What do you think that does to the next generation of boys growing up that watch him, right? You know, what's your opinion on that? Like how he's conditioning them who look up to him right now for that kind of stuff?
Brother, I may go to my grave being the only one that realized this, but the real issue was not what Sean said, because what he said was childish and stupid, you know, and in the SEALs, it's like, well, come on, come try.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah.
But the real issue here, brother, and I think this is why the video garnished 54 million views on the internet, right? On the internet total, because the real issue was Sean's influence is huge, and he has a massive influencer. And Sean is an influencer, and he likes to bag on influencers, but he's actually a no-joke influencer. And how I know that now for sure, because I didn't really know much about Sean Strickland before I called him out, but the hate mail that I've received the in my DMs and stuff, the only hate that I have received is pretty much from 15-year-old kids. And I'm not disrespecting anyone that's 15 out there right now, because you're a young man. You're a young man out there. But my point is, it's not their fault, okay? But the hate mail that I received from these young kids out there, these young teenagers, was mind-blowing. You know, like, SEALs aren't fighting for our freedom. You know, da-da-da. It's like they don't understand, and they're not comprehending that if you take away the guard dogs, the wolves come in and devour the sheep. The reason why you can sleep at night and play your Nintendo or Call of Duty is because there are vicious guard dogs that are standing by. And the mere thought of those guys from the Taliban, the Mountain Tigers, the Mujahideen, the mere thought of the Rangers, the men with green faces, all these different, the white devils, all these things, these SEALs, like, the mere thought of that keeps them from acting out and doing very scary, scary things to our family here at home. And one aspect of this, Johnny, it shows you how protected we are. It shows you, if you look very deeply into the situation, it actually shows you how protected we are if I can have thousands of young teenager boys come in and say, you don't fight for our freedom. Sean's the best in the world. You know, because they worship Sean just degrade and just take a dump on the military. And that just shows you how innocent they are. And I hope they stay innocent. And I love the freedom of speech. I can agree to disagree with certain people out there, brother. But it's a very scary time when you have somebody like Sean that says, I want to go kill someone. You know, give me a freebie. Give me a free card. Did you see that on Joe Rogan?
Yeah, he said some bullshit like that on Joe Rogan. This fucking client. Joe's like, why? Like, what the fuck? Like,
Joe's like, I don't want nothing to be part of this.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, you and I both know this. And to everybody out there listening, men like Sean who speak that way are typically men who have a ton of insecurities and a lot and boastful men like that that want to talk as though they're tough I know he's tough in the ring, and I'm not taking that away from him, but a lot of times they have a lot of fear in them, and that's why they have to bark so loud. And you and I both know the Spec Ops community, those bros don't bark very loud because their bite, when it comes, it rips people apart. That's one of the things that people fail to realize. When someone's out that loud barking about just asinine shit, like wanting to go kill people, you're like, bro, the real people that have had to do this for this country, right? And it is for this country, because there are, like you said, you put it perfect, there are bad people that absolutely want to come and make great damage on this country and the way of life. But it's like guys that have done that job, they're like, no, man, I don't wish that on anybody. I don't wish that on any single person out there. If you can go your whole life never having to think about that, that's a good life, man. And for some guy to come out and say shit like that, it just shows you the naivety and the infancy almost of his mental state, you know?
Yeah, it was very... And my statement, you know, maybe SEALs always use a little bit too demolition when they too much explosives to destroy their target, you know. But I don't.
We do too.
I don't. You know, they actually do, you know. But yeah. But I don't take back, brother, anything. I will never take back anything that I said about Sean Strickland, and it was all true.
No, yeah.
I'll never take it back. Yeah, I'll never take it back, brother, because. Especially when a guy disrespects the SEAL community and the brotherhood like he did. I'll never take it back. You know, that's just how it is.
And you and I chatted about this too. And I made a comment on Andy Stump's, you know, Instagram. Anybody can go see that shit. Cause I was, you know, a little bent out of shape by him. Cause his perception of that conversation was not my perception. I had your perception, similar perception of it. I think his perception of that conversation was very flawed and for numerous reasons. I think he's fangirling a little bit. And the other thing about that was there's like almost no way you cut that when you start looking at, and again, guys like us who have done also protection, and people don't understand the world of protection either, but have done protection for many years on top of special operations. Man, you learn to read people's body language, their facial expressions very fucking well, because that's speaking a lot louder than their words. And when you look at what Sean's saying, there's no way you can have the same interpretation as Andy Stump. By any means, if you're starting to look at actually his body language, his facial expression, listen to his tone, no way you have that interpretation of him. And so that kind of irritated me as well. And a little bit to that, to everybody, was Andy came out and came after Jimmy a little bit about Jimmy's background, because, you know, he's been, I don't know, indicted the right word or whatever? You've been indicted for...
I think being in the arena is the right word.
Yeah, you've been in the arena, bro. You have been in the arena.
It's being in the freaking, it's bullfighting in the arena for the last 20 freaking years, man. Yeah, I was arrested by 15 FBI agents, indicted with, I think, 8 felonies at the time. Was placed on pretrial house arrest confinement.
Yeah.
Transferred me through the federal penitentiary for 4 days and then on house arrest. And this was all pending trial. The reason why people may think that I went to prison for fraud is, you know, the Department of Justice has about a 98% chance of conviction, okay? It was looking like I was going to prison for a long time with John McAfee. Now, they put me on pre-trial house arrest confinement pending federal trial for a year and a half. The reason why I was on house arrest is I was awaiting John McAfee to be extradited from a Spanish prison, okay? During that time, they found John McAfee mysteriously dead in the prison cell, okay? Now, we all know how much the government loved John McAfee. You know what I'm saying? I can't even say much about this because I know the deal with a lot of things with this country, the way it's going. It's a scary place.
Yeah.
And they found John McAfee dead. They dismissed my case. They wanted John McAfee dead or alive.
Or alive, yeah.
And that's the truth.
Yeah, and it was a whole nonsense, I mean, in my opinion, very nonsense case in any ways, because it was centralized around cryptocurrency and actions around cryptocurrency. And massively in the industry, massively people were pumping and dumping. That was just the game cryptocurrency was in. None of it was illegal because they had not made laws on cryptocurrency, and it was really not even regulated or governed, really, for the most part whatsoever. And a lot of it was just nonsense. It was a game that was being played with cryptocurrency that everybody was doing on a regular basis. Very well-known people. I cannot confirm or deny, but my speculation is this was part of kind of things like what Elon Musk did with Dogecoin and did with Bitcoin when he invested heavily a lot of Tesla's money into Bitcoin, drove the price up, and then actually created profits or created revenue for Tesla after that. But, you know, there was a lot of things for that he did, and a lot of people did to kind of spike up different coins. And then they would dump when it was getting to a good amount, and then they'd make profits off of it. And that was one of the things that kind of bothered me about your case, was that it wasn't, as far as I know, there was nothing illegal about those things, whether or not that even happened, but there was nothing about it that was illegal. And there was tons of people doing it. You still see it to this day.
Brother, I retired from the SEALs, okay, after 17 years, full medical, got out honorably. Not that honorable is on a piece of paper. Trust me about that. But you know what I'm saying? Like, whatever about that. But I got out and I hooked up with John McPhee, went to his place to be his bodyguard, turned out to be like his right-hand man, and then like a son, and then the CEO of his company. John McPhee, he was very, very influential to people. I think 75% of the million people on Twitter would do exactly what he said, okay? Reasoning, yeah, 75%, that was the analysis breakdown. His reasoning for what he did with this crypto pump and dump thing is that, you know, one of the charges against us was that John McPhee did not tell people that he was invested in the coin that he was talking about, okay? Yeah. But John McPhee said, listen, Michael Jordan, when he goes on a commercial wearing the Jordan shoes, you know, he doesn't tell you that he's getting paid by Nike. Correct. Okay. Correct. He doesn't tell you that. You automatically know if Jordan is wearing those shoes on a commercial, he must be getting paid a lot of money to advertise these shoes. Now, to your point, when I got there, John McPhee assured me, he was like, Jimmy, there's no rules to this game. And of course, stupid me at the time was like, okay, you know? And I think that was the case with a lot of guys in that arena at the time.
Yeah.
You got to think back, Johnny, 2017, all right? There ain't no little grandmas playing crypto.
No.
You'd have to be, it took me a long time to understand crypto, a long time to understand the system and trade. I was terrible at first. And so if you were playing this game, you were in a high-stakes, top-notch casino game. You were going to the casinos, and you knew exactly what you were doing in this game. The old woman on her computer just doesn't know how to do this. The very, very smart people didn't know how to do this.
Yeah.
So I leave no excuses on the table for my actions. In fact, once the FBI explained to me exactly what I did, I was like, oh, man, you're right. I guess that is wrong if there's rules about it. Okay, yeah, all right. You know, hit me. Hit me where it counts, right? And that was for the civil case, right?
Yeah.
But all in all, man, I think that I don't know if John McPhee understood the implications since, like you said, there were no rules at the time.
Right.
He was an opportunist. John McPhee was an opportunist.
And every industry through the freaking inception of our society has experienced opportunists. And until the opportunity gets noticed, and essentially what happens is the government just determines that someone's making too much money and they can't account for it to get their cut, then the government makes rules against it. That's kind of the synopsis of what happens. And that's semi what happened with the crypto industry as well. But in 17, you didn't even have things like, I don't believe Coinbase was even around yet, where you could even publicly buy coins. So you had to really know what you were doing, where to even go. So, yeah, I mean, it wasn't like, let me just pull up trading cryptocurrency online. Like it didn't necessarily work that way. But there's more to the story here too. And I have a lot of internal knowledge about the other part of this story, which is, you know, you were part of Blackwater, part of a time when Blackwater had an incident in Nassau Square, and you were targeted by the federal government. And there was a whole play behind that that has since been revealed, let's say, to me when I was doing protection over there through the FBI and through some friends of mine in the State Department, that essentially what had happened in Nassau Square was legitimate. It was a legitimate firefight. And then the guys that got in that firefight, Jimmy Watson in there, but the guys that got in there, you guys were in a position that you had to fight back and get out of there and exfil. And then you guys got identified by the federal government. You guys got essentially attacked by our own government legally. And on top of all of that, what people don't realize, and this has never been talked about, I had so many friends from Blackwater, because what happened was Triple Canopy came up north and took over that contract. They were the only ones that could backfill that Baghdad contract because it was so big.
And that's the thing is, like, again, there's a lot here that I'm going to bring around for everybody to see Jimmy and the life that, you know, he's lived and how he's taken responsibility for his stuff. But that was the thing. Yeah, there's no, like, yeah. there's responsibility, there's ownership that you took. It's not like you were like, oh, I'm completely devoid. And like you said, they shared some things with you that were like, hey, man, this is what you violate. And you're like, oh, shit, I had no clue. And I take responsibility for that, you know? So that's where a lot of respect for that.
Yeah, I take full responsibility, dude, for all of my actions. And, you know, and I'm not deflecting whatsoever. You know, the truth is, I literally had to be explained these crimes. And then once it was explained to me, I said, fair enough. If there's rules to this, then I messed up and I'll take my licks, right? Yeah. But I never went to prison for fraud. And that's what really was just absolutely incorrect on from Andy Stump.
Yeah.
Is, and by the way, Trump was charged with more felonies than Al Capone. Okay, so what? Are we supposed to just not trust anything that Trump says anymore? Come on, man.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, no, and to that point, like, that's, yeah, exactly. You had, and this is what really bothered me too, and why I had to comment on Andy's, you know, IG, was because he went after a Steel brother before he defended a Steel brother, and he didn't even have his fucking facts straight. So that means he jumped to a conclusion against the Steel brother before he had the facts, and then went to the defense of somebody who criticized his own fucking training and his own life of being a Navy SEAL. And that, to me, is, it's almost like, bro, you literally just fangirled this dude and even took it so far as to say, yeah, I agree, I'm a little bitch and you're better than me. Like, that's kind of like what I took it as him saying. And then he went and attacked his own SEAL brother with not even the right information. And to me, it's like he should have at least been like, sorry, I don't mean to keep going, but I was like, he at least should have been like, hey, bro, I can't comment on that right now because I just don't know enough. So let me look into this, right? That's what he should have at least done, at the fucking very least.
At the very minimum, if what he says is true, that he reached out to Sean Strickland, which is true, and said that I reached out to Sean Strickland, that's not what he meant to say. Sean Strickland didn't say, I'll break every fucking seal. No, he didn't say that. He was a gentleman in every way, because we all know Sean Strickland's a gentleman. No, but Jimmy Watson, don't believe anything he says because he went to prison for fraud.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, man, we can't be trusting Trump either because, you know, he was charged with so many felonies either. So it's actually super odd that he would do that. And I don't know if he's Strickland's PR guy or what, but I will say this about Andy. I want to say this, okay? I obviously, in the good old Ranger Marine SEAL way, I called Andy up. I DM'd him first, and I said, hey, brother, you know how this is going to go now. Tell me where you live, because we're going behind the burn, brother. You know, that's the only option. My only reasoning sometimes, you know, yeah. Big old monkey here, is, all right, I guess we got to go behind the berm, you know, why even argue about this anymore, yeah. You know? And then I confronted him about, and he started backpedaling a lot, backtracking. Now, not on some of his statements, okay? I want to give him that. I want to make sure that people know that Andy didn't back down on some of his statements, but he sure did on me going to prison for fraud, and that's why you shouldn't trust me, okay?
Sure.
Because we all know how amazing the government is, you know? And so, I think you catch my undertones.
Uh-huh.
And so,
I got you.
So I said, Andy, how could you, okay, first of all, why is the only hate mail that I've received from 15-year-old boys and now Andy Stump, a guy that I thought I respected?
Yeah.
And I was, in all of my SEAL buddies, I've had the massive support speaks for itself. Even the pro MMA fighters are on my side on this, which was surprising.
Yeah.
John Jones, everybody.
Didn't John Jones just call out Strickland?
John Jones literally said, this is the first time I'm embarrassed to call myself an MMA fighter. Sean is so dumb. Something like that.
Yeah.
A lot of guys did. And, you know, the conversation that me and Sean, me and Andy had was pretty simple. I said, how could you elevate and worship Sean Strickland after he just completely disrespected the SEAL community while downplaying the hazards of SEAL training? Like, yeah, I've had a couple guys die here. Yeah, that's not neither here nor there. Yeah, the chafing, the chafing's whatever, you know, like, what are you talking about? Yeah. Did you go to the same buds as me, bro? And the last thing I'll say about that is, you know, he said that I needed to take it down to a two. Brother, we need to take it up to a freaking 100 because our country is burning to the ground.
Yeah.
If guys like Andy, me, and you, and everyone else keep at a level two, we're not going to have, you see the problem? We're not going to have an America left.
Right.
If we keep this up for a couple more years with the way our country is going, I will give it to Andy. Okay. After a conversation with Andy, you know, like two real men should, you know, your show's all about the art of masculinity. You know, I believe that Andy, he issued an apology. Okay. For those statements he made on the Patrick Bette David show regarding the false imprisonment right. stuff. And he's backtracked a lot. And I will say, I respect Andy now way more for doing that than anything else. And I forgive him for what he said. You know, Mark Twain said, a lie will travel halfway around the world while the truth is putting on its shoes. So I do applaud Andy for apologizing, you know, and because he did that, we're best friends now, yeah. that type of thing, you know. I love Andy. It's okay. You know, after talking on, when I talked to him on the phone, he was completely different than how he sounded on the yeah. Patrick Bette David show. You know, maybe it was a one-off or whatever. Didn't do any damage to me, you know? And, you know, my field buddies were kind of like, what the heck happened, bro? Like,
yeah.
what's he talking about? Yeah, we've had skin grafts. Like, it's a well-known thing in buds. Like, what are you talking about? So I don't know why he would do that, man.
Yeah. I don't know either, bro. And for me, I just think of you know, a man like that he's a coward in the sense that he jumps to defend somebody he hasn't served with and leaves a brother hanging out there and actually a community, because it wasn't just you. He didn't support the entire community. Now, he slandered you, yes, but he didn't, he apologized for that. But then he also still hasn't, as far as I know, retracted his defense of Strickland's kind of comments in that he was just, you were presenting Strickland's comments incorrectly. That to me is fucking cowardice, because that's bullshit. But that's, anyway, I'm not trying to stoke that fire.
If Andy doesn't retract his statements, you know, in regards to just generally defending the SEAL teams, that's on him.
Right.
He has to sleep. Andy has to sleep with Andy at night. Yeah. He has True. To deal with his own things. And I just can't really believe that he actually believes that. I can see right through that stuff. And I told him, I said, bro, I'm like the bad luck lottery to mess with, man. I've been fighting my entire life, bro.
Yeah.
Like up against governments, up against, you know, the whole Blackwater trial against me and those four poor dudes that had to get pardoned by Trump. You know, is it no surprise that I had to fight for so long? I'll just say it like that.
No, man.
Nope.
No, it is not.
And, it really did a disservice to the SEAL Brotherhood and all warfighters by him doing that, because guess what? It creates more dissension. And it's not in the name for me. This is, I'm all out, man. You know, I'm all out. This is not a marketing game for me.
No.
This is not a game for me, bro. You know, I didn't know that video would go so viral.
Yeah, right.
I was making a statement whether it was, I just tagged Strickland in it. I thought it was just me and him. Like, what's up, bro?
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Of course, I spread a message now. And I want attention to come over and see the power and the redemption of God and what God can do in a man's life, a broken man's life like me, man. Because it's been one heck of a battle, brother.
Yeah.
And I've been in the depths of despair pit.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, we're getting winding down here, but I want to actually talk about, I know that story and I want you to share, cause like, I don't want people thinking we're here just talking shit. First off, like Jimmy's, if you guys haven't recognized the loyalty and integrity in this man is something that all men should be striving for. And it wasn't like, if you guys knew even, hopefully you guys kind of caught on to a little bit of his story, but if you even knew all the story, you'd see it. But talk a little bit about that, because I know a lot of that struggle came when you were in SEALs, and people may not think it has to do with what it has to do with, but I know part of that struggle was right before you went to SEALs, and part of it was while you were in there, right?
Yeah, the struggle was real, man. The FBI came after my career after I testified in the Nisar Square event. They did not like how I testified. I was called into the office one day and told I was getting kicked out of the Navy in 10 days. I had to literally fight like hell. And I stayed in the Navy, you know, got out honorably, all that garbage, right? Doesn't matter. The point is it was hell fighting the system in the Navy. And yeah, I lost it somewhere on the night shift, they say. Somewhere on those mini combat deployments, I just kind of lost myself. And I lost my a lot of hope in the nation, in America. And man, you know, there's been some circumstances that kept me here now in America. I know that God's got me here for a purpose now, to help men out, to help guide people back from the darkest moments in their life. God met me in the darkest time of my life while I was on house arrest, yeah. You know? And they say, yo, well, you know, prisoners meet Jesus and stuff. Well, you dang right they do. Because sometimes you got to be at the bottom of the bottom of the barrel and be wrangled in by the law to realize that you need help. And you're not as crazy as you think. You're not as wild man and lone wolf and all this garbage. We need brothers. We need each other. Iron sharpens iron, only at the right angle. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, brother. I'm shocked that was what you said your darkest moment was, because I know you've had a few and God's been like, you shouldn't be here right now for many different times in your life. And if you want to share some of that, I won't force you to. But I know one scenario in particular that, you know, you probably shouldn't be here. And God's been there with you every time, bro. You are here to impact 100%. And you're here to impact big, brother. And I see that in you, and I hear that in your testimony and how you hold that integrity with just the man that you are. You're not seeking this whole shit with Sean. You're not seeking attention. You are seeking integrity. And with Andy, you're not seeking attention. You're seeking integrity. And those are the things that men need to hold up to today. And I think that that's a great message for any man out there, any young man out there, even looking to see what it's like to be a real man standing confidently in who he is and connected with God. Like, that's you, you know, that is who you are.
Yeah. I've been through so many dark periods in life when it seemed like there was nothing but crashing waves coming at me. And I hope this message comes across right to the guys that are watching your channel right now, brother. But I have been up against the mighty storms of this life in the darkest moments of my life. You know, from prison, house arrest to the palace, basically, and back and forth, you know. And in my most darkest hours of having to climb up out of the pit, that's where I realized that God really is, and he truly is, and he lifted me out of those pits, man. And so I always try to encourage anyone out there that's listening to this, no matter how bad your situation is right now, no matter what you're going up against, if you keep moving forward one step at a time, even if you don't believe in God, he believes in you. Keep trusting, keep believing, keep moving forward, because he will rescue you out of the darkest times of your life. And I give all glory to him, man.
That's powerful, brother. Oh, man, we have touched tip of the iceberg with you, Jimmy, and so grateful for your time on here. And those are powerful words right there. And I don't want to ruin that. And so I appreciate it, brother. We're going to have to get you back on the show, because there's more stuff for us to dive into and your story to help guys out there. And also to just let people know kind of the realities of what strong men, when cards get stacked against strong men in this world, and we still have to fight through as well. So I appreciate you, brother. My last question for you before we peace out is, what does the art of masculinity mean to you?
Well, my favorite book is The Art of War. So it's extremely close there to masculinity, the art of war and masculinity. Man, the art of masculinity, let's see. You know, you have to understand that your entire life is not a strategy, but it is a canvas that has to be repainted over and over sometimes. Sometimes we have a super messy canvas, and it's okay to start over again. And where that ties with masculinity is only the realest man out there, the truest man out there, he has to unmask himself eventually. He can no longer live behind the mask, right? He has to face his fears. And sometimes facing your fears is starting over from day one and saying, this messy ass painting that I have right here, I'm sorry, but it's got to go. I've got to re-scrape it off and start over again, and you will have a beautiful painting in your life. And that's the art of masculinity to me, brother.
Damn, that is, I love that analogy, bro. That is freaking amazing and wholeheartedly agree. Bro, it's been so much fun having you on the show. You're a legend. You know how much I support you and grateful for you standing up and being the man that you are today. Don't ever stop that. And to everybody listening, as always, remember that the world deserves a better caliber of man, and it's our responsibility to give it to them.